Hi, Dan Alexander here, and this episode is brought to you by RecWired, the all-in-one go-to platform for serious recruitment professionals, owners, and founders who are looking to grow their businesses. Now, we'll actually be launching the new online platform very soon, and if you'd like to be one of the first people to get access to our state-of-the-art learning platform and vault of online resources, then get in touch with us through the link in the description of this episode.
Hello, 2023. I didn't drink any red wine last night. I threw the chocolate out today and did the first PT session after some morning meetings and one-on-ones and all of that good stuff that we do in business. Trying to pump myself up for a jiu-jitsu session tonight after work and run it all back again tomorrow and create some good habits. Thinking of going cold turkey on the booze for 12 weeks and getting absolutely massive in the gym because I got a bit scrawny from all the jiu-jitsu training and stuff trying to compete in that. So, new goals physically, business-wise, I've got a couple of things up my sleeve that I'm fleshing out. Really excited about. Just have to kind of get down to the minor details of it all and keep ticking along with the stuff that we have. Life in Gibraltar is great. The sun's shining today. Over Christmas, after a little wet period in early December, the sun's been shining. Done a bit of skiing. And I'm meeting a couple of buddies in the next couple of days. We're going to go up to Granada and do a bit of skiing. We used to be bartenders together in Brussels 1,000 years ago. So super excited to see them and connect and almost have a bit of a time machine with them. Hence, I'm not going off the beer straight away. That'll be for next week. But all is looking good. Really excited about this year and what we can do and how we can help people. In our community, RecWired, our scalable group, The Bridge, I think there's about 200 companies in there, maybe more. 200 active anyway. And a lot of them are wondering what's best practice to launch in America and scale. Like not just do it and have do it remotely or have three people in an office over there, but actually staff it up and really take it on. And maybe have multiple offices. And there was a lot of people giving differing advice. So I thought I would go and grab somebody who's done it and find out how much it costs, really how much it costs, and what were the challenges and what was the evolution of that. And the person I landed on was Mark Sanowski. I've had him on the podcast 3 or 4 times. He calls this the second half of his career, The Last Dance. he had the big exit from a staff group a few years back, and you know, we've gone through that story, and this is the next reincarnation of what he wants to do and who he has done it with in America. So I'm going to tell you all that story and trying to get into the details of it more than anything else. So it's a real piece of content that will help you if you want to scale up or you want to launch in America, or if you're a young person thinking that maybe you want to move out to America and give it a shot, this should also help you. On a personal note, we almost moved to America last year and paid the lawyer's fee, gone through quite a bit of due diligence on it, and weighed it up against Gibraltar in the end, and this suited our goals, lifestyle, family, everything, just that bit more. But I think maybe if I was earlier in my career, America could have been the right path for us. But it's not for everybody, and it definitely costs, and there's a price to pay for the success that you get over there. But if you can make it, it's well worth it. Here's a story of how Mark backed somebody to do that, and the business that they've created together, the journey that they've gone on, and some of the lessons learned. Hope you enjoy it. If you do, let me know. I'm going to try and get more podcasts out this year. A lot more from people in our community. We've got like thousands of members now. So loads of people who would love to help them tell their stories in the recruitment sector. So if you want to come on the podcast, just hit me up. It's you don't really need much preparation. Just have a conversation, come on, tell your story, have fun, and we can get into the detail. As ever, thank you to our sponsors, Loxo and Sourcewell, two of our biggest supporters on the podcast, tools that we use in our business every day to keep things afloat, and we appreciate you. If any of you guys are listening and you want to join our community, it's free for recruitment founders, so hit us up. Hit me up on LinkedIn, just message me, and I will get you the access link. And if we'll also match you with other peers that are around the same level as you. Then you can ask whatever questions you need in your business. There's loads of non-executive directors in our community as well that you can bounce ideas off. So, all about getting back in line with what our mission is, and ours is to help recruitment founders scale their business all over the world. And that's what we're going to do. So, over to Mark. All right, welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. Joined here today by Mark Snowsby, third or fourth time on the podcast. We've been in touch since the start of the second half of your career. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, something like that. The last dance, as I referred to it last week.
Very good. All right, so just for anybody who doesn't know you, give us your elevator pitch.
So very quickly, started off at S3 in the 90s, worked there for 3.5 years, then was MD of a company called SEC that was on the stock market, then stayed there 3.5 years, then set up Staff Group 2003, sold it in 2015 to the Cordant Group, I think in what was the largest or one of the largest UK staffing deals. Took a couple of year break, then set up Engtal late 2018, late 2017 actually. And we're a staffing company based in Chicago with a smaller office in Dallas, and primarily on the perm side, 41 people, of which 38 full-time heads. And that's kind of what I'm doing most of the time now, focusing more on that business.
Making dreams come true.
Supposedly, that's the prospectus.
Good stuff. All right. So I suppose if you're listening to this and you're a founder, you're going to want to know, how can you set up in the US and what does that blueprint look like? So we're going to delve into some of that and maybe some of the challenges. And then the other side is, if you're a recruiter in the UK, and let's say all in, you're on a base of 30 to 40, and maybe you might make 20K on commission. How can you go to the States and blow that number out of the water and fast track your career? And what does that actually look like? Is it possible? Is it easier? What's the real challenges? So Mark doesn't pull any punches. You can ask anybody that. So we're going to get the truth today.
Yeah. Hard truth.
Always the truth, Mark.
Yeah, you got it.
All right. Good stuff. Just fresh out of doing a bench session. Was it the personal best today?
No, I'm going for reps at the moment. So it was 80 kg. I seem to have hit a wall where I'm not getting any higher than I'd like to. But I give it my all.
All right. Good on you. Okay. So where to start? I suppose let's talk about the market in general. So before Christmas, there was rumblings, and then it was kind of the end of the world. As somebody who runs a tech business, firstly, give us a rundown into the size and that, and maybe some of the growth trajectory of Engtal, just so people know what we're talking about, and then jump into the market dynamics.
Yeah, we're all on the direct side, direct hire side, so permanent, as it would be in the UK. We're tech and engineering business, I would say, fairly equally split between the two. We've also got a small life sciences business, which we set up 6, 7 months ago. We're probably around 6.5 million GP dollars this year. And a reasonably good conversion of that to net profit. And we are we had a good COVID. First couple of years treading water, pure play engineering staffing business. Then with social distancing, rules in the US, we had to pivot. It was literally pivot or die. So we pivoted onto to the tech piece. And that went really well. We like a few staffing businesses had a really strong COVID period, particularly last year. It was a real standout year. And been able to build a lot of that this year. 2023 is going to be interesting. I'm speaking to more people probably at the moment to see what their view is, and in the last week than I have done, because it's definitely it's going to be a journey. It's not going to be linear. It's not going to be smooth sailing for everyone. But I think it's really important that you've got a fairly diverse business where you're not necessarily totally relying on one income stream, and that you are versatile enough to be and agile enough to make decisions as and when you need to.
Yeah, you're giving me nightmares of COVID when we got caught with one income stream doing international travel for recruiters.
It won't be that bad.
Won't be that bad. Okay, will it be 2008 bad?
I don't think so, no. But you've got to prepare for that. I think you've got to be a little bit protective of cash. I think, when there is uncertainty, you've really got to be able to predict as well as you can do the next 6 months on the controllables, on your internal stuff. So I think it's those companies that maybe overhired in 2022, internally, probably need to be a little bit cautious. And what I find with the American market is at times they can be a bit reactive. Clients can sometimes get a little bit carried away when the time is good, and when the time is bad, they can be a little bit reactive. We don't lose many people internally. I think it's probably our biggest strength. We lost a few people to go internal, to Meta Group and organizations like that, and they've all been laid off. Since they took the double treble the base. Some people have got laid off quite nice, but it's interesting. It's just that I get why they did it. You can get life-changing money, work remotely, work from anywhere. It's tempting. But these companies are ruthless as well. And when it's not going the way they want, or they don't like what they see in the future, you will be the first to go.
Talk to me more about the cost of running a recruitment business in America. Surely it's more than people think, and the cash flow element of it is more challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I didn't sell Staff Group, there is no way on earth I could have done this. You always got to decide, do you want to go to the US from day one like I did? If you do, and if you want to bring any people in the U from the UK to get E2 investor status, you need to have $450,000 worth of assets. May have changed, but that was certainly the case a few years ago. And you need to be liquid. You also need to recognize that to hire a graduate in the US, whether it's New York, Chicago, or LA, it's going to have a four in front of it, possibly with a five if it's New York or LA. And that costs money. You're not going to get a return from them from a cash perspective. Let's say maybe 6 months, 5 months on average. Could be worse, could be better. So you do really need deep pockets. I think you need to be a millionaire. If I could be as crass to say that's what I would say. The other way of doing it, I didn't do this, but I think I know people who do, is you do it from the UK. So you do the US from the UK. You work as near to US hours as you can do. I would suggest starting at 1 p.m., finishing at 10 p.m. Look, you can do it earlier, but to start with, you're going to need to
make it. I think that's we've placed one of your top performers who've done that.
Ashley, yeah, he's done that. He's over now, and he's a seven figure biller, and he's one of the best guys I've ever seen.
And he was a 200k biller before.
He was, but he's got an engine, a work ethic that is constant. He never, you have to make sacrifices on that. You know, it's the Thursday night in the summer, your pals are going out to the pub, you want to go, but you got calls. It's really, really challenging. When we did it with people from the UK, and I think we had six, of which five of them have gone over to the US now, and they're all settled in there. One of them is going to stay because he's got a child on the way. And, that was always kind of the plan with him, and he's made his lifestyle work really well for him. But you have to be really, really disciplined. We're flexible on Fridays, of course. And as and when you get more experience, you've got to show pretty much total flexibility to, the individual knows what to do. But they're all over in the US now. That was all kind of on their plans. And it's worked out really well for all of them.
So when you went to identify, so I think like you had the ideal scenario where you're like, here's a bag of money. I've done this before. Give us the blueprint of what that looked like.
Yeah, I think it was, I've really got to credit Chris Attia, who is my business partner, because he's got 6 years experience of there. And I always try to surround myself with people who have skills and experiences that I didn't do. I did this in Germany with Staff Group. I got someone from the S3 Group who I knew would have had a similar upbringing, a brutal upbringing at times, low base, high commission, that type of model. And he knew the market really, really well. He had seen a lot of things that did work, that didn't work. The big debate, 360 v180 over in the US, and both techniques have their merit. So he really helped kind of shape what we did. And then, look, it's a little bit trial by error, but do you want to go down the grad model? Do you want to go down the sales experience model, which costs a bit more, but they haven't maybe got recruitment? And you've got to be really self-aware, I think, that when you're going over there. And I'll never forget, we lost one person in the early days to Rank Xerox selling photocopiers. And they told me they were going to that job. I almost laughed, thinking, in the UK, that would not be, selling printer cartridges and toner. It's not, I'd like to think that is not a step up from working for me, but they were earning double. They were going to earn double what they did there. It's some of these jobs that you have a value in your head.
What are they earning now, I wonder?
I think it probably will, but they've actually moved on from there, but it was about a six figure salary. And you've got people working for Salesforce, I headhunted them, who are 22 year old grads taking 120, 130K, not working that hard either. Mm. So you've just got to be very aware of what you are offering and what the reality is. And I think there's a lot of spin on US recruitment, how much money that you can make. And a lot of that is definitely true, but there's also the cost of your life. How much is your rent? How much is your lifestyle? All those sorts of things that I do think matter a lot.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one, and it's one I can only touch upon, but the having taken on a few grad assignments, it was very hard to sell recruitment to them in the same way that you would in Manchester or areas in England where recruitment seen as this good thing. There, they don't even think about it, and you're in competition, it feels, with so many other industries that are paying way more. How do you identify what a good graduate is, like entering into the recruitment field when all this other competition is happening?
Yeah, it's a good question. So people in the US graduate, most of them graduate in May. Some a little bit, some different times, but most of them graduate in May. I've interviewed 20 to 30 people over the last month, including last night. I've got interviews today, I've got interviews tomorrow. So I am trying to cherry pick best graduates from the best business schools, and really who want to get into sales. That's all. That's what I really want before they get to me. So, you know, not doesn't matter about recruitment, but sales is the thing. And we've hired 4 or 5 people already. But people in the US, they get really early. The graduates, they're really starting to look around now, and the best ones have been snapped up. Certainly by the time of sort of February, March time comes for a summer start next year. I did not know that at the beginning. I only realized that. I've only realized that in the last 12, 15 months. We did that this year. None of our grads have left that we hired. We hired, I think, I don't know, it was 14 or 15 people started in the summer, and they're all still there. And I've no concerns over any of them.
Knowing a little bit about you and Chris, I know you've invested a lot in the L&D process of getting that graduate stuff right. Can you talk just a little bit on that? Because I think a lot of people think, I'm going to go over there, I'll put a few grads in, and then it just all disappeared.
Yeah, totally. It's a good question. So we've learned a little bit, and it's getting better all the time. But we've essentially we do two cohorts. So we do one cohort at the start of the summer, which will be June, and then a second cohort in August for the people who maybe wanted to go traveling or to Europe in the summer. And then they almost have two teams. They have their cohort team, and they have their team that they're going to be in the longer term. And I think it's worked really well where they've kind of got that, the people that I identify with, you know, the people who are unconsciously don't know what to do because they've just started in their role. And they've also got the people who they're going to be working with, who they can see, you know, maybe who have progressed and what they hopefully aspire to be. And where it's worked really well for us is when they were doing the cold calling. So we don't do cold calling initially for us. It's very much candidate first. And then around, I don't know, week 10, week 11, they maybe evolve over to that. There are nerves. You know, they go into the room. And I really recognize now that we got this wrong a little bit at Staff Group. They go out into the room and you prepare them for them. You do all the objection handling courses, but then they can't get hold of anyone for a long period of time. So what we've done is we've taken a boardroom, everyone has headphones, and they're doing the cold calling at the beginning with their cohort group, and they're the celebration of the wins together. Yeah. You know, sometimes when they get hold of someone who is just a decision maker, even though they may have been rejected, has been absolutely brilliant. And the feedback has been that it just felt so good to fail with other people doing the same thing, and then when the fails turns into successes, to work really, really well. And I really think that's the way it should be done. But I wouldn't, if you'd asked me that 10 months ago, I wouldn't have said that. That very much came from the L&D team. And it's just got rid of a little bit of those nerves that I found. And you know, we had a lot of people in previous lives. I saw it at S3. They get to 3-4 months and then they quit. They just realize they haven't got the stomach for this. But if they're doing it with other people next to them, opposite them, then it seems to work better.
Yeah, if you condition them early, it does. Now, just a question on that, because people will be listening going, how do I get the phone numbers? What am I calling switchboards? Am I buying the data? Like, what is that? Because in America, it's not easy to get that done if you're not an established business. So what does that look like from an evolution of a business who want to get into an area?
You know, you're using the LinkedIn maybe to get the intro and to get the details. You know, you can cross-reference with Zoom Info. You can cross-reference with Seamless to get all the contacts. So there's various different ways to do it. And you've got to invest in your tech stack, which is, you know, something you guys are pretty big on, to avoid wasting time. To do a lot of more mundane things. But it's really about setting up a warm call rather than the cold call. It's just about setting up the warm call. And you know, what we teach people, you've got to have the best product out there. Your product has to be really, really shit hot. You've got to, you know, you can get a MIT alumni, 2 years, 3 years experience, or a Stanford or a Princeton. It's going to make people wake up. And if you can get that as your hook to get in most of the American decision makers, they love to talk, so they, you know, that's part of the battle. But there's so many shit recruitment companies out there who come up with really bad product and waste their time, and no one wants their time to be wasted.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I suppose the thing you're trying to avoid is recruiters sitting there just doing lists for list's sake and really actioning and getting stuff from it. Like, is that just part of your L&D process?
That's part of the L&D process, putting yourself out there, and you've got to be prepared to fail and to be blown out. And that, you know, what can you achieve on a call? The biggest, you know, challenge I've always seen is people reluctance to make the call in the first place and to try and do everything over LinkedIn. And you've got to get, that's a mindset thing. And you've got to get people in. But I'm really kind of open with people. I said, look, let's talk about how are you going to earn $250,000 in a year. I think that's the upper end of realistic if you're really good. Really good being a term there. The only way to do that is to win accounts and to win repeat business and to be looking at six-figure accounts and hopefully getting four or five of them.
I always remember speaking to you and you said to me, look, it's all right earning $100,000 a year or whatever, but if you want to really have a bit of life-changing room in your life, then that looks at 350. I thought, and then you broke it down, like what that gets you in life compared to it. And I thought, so I take it that there, you break that down for a 25-year-old as well. Yeah. So like, let's look at what that gets you.
And your life has to get easier. You know, first year or two, proper graft. You're going to work really, really hard. You're going to make, you know, if you're really good, you're going to make sacrifices. But everyone, they have to see their life year three, year four, year five does get a little bit easier, because to maintain that level of intensity, of spot business, of aggression, you know, assertiveness on the phone at age 30 when you've got young children or whatever, it's not sustainable. So it's all about how you know, what I say to people, how are you going to make your life look better? What do you want your life to look like in 12 months, 24 months from now? Let's work
out. Let's just jump back into the cost of running a business again, because I think it's something people underestimate when they do the United States. And it turns out there's been a lot of tears rather than a lot of joy of people who've gone there. If you look at the number of people who've tried it, it's really tough. So when you look at the landscape, there's a lot of American firms that will call themselves search firms. And in a search firm, I'm not talking about a Shrek tier one firm. I'm talking about your average firm where the guys are between, and the girl and the ladies are between 35 and 55 and doing their thing, and they don't really have much support. They're taking home 50% of what they bill, all of that. I see a lot of people getting their commission structure wrong because they start looking at what the competition does in America based on that.
Yeah.
How do you build a commission structure that keeps your cash flow intact, but yet rewards what the people do in a sensible way? And like, can you elaborate on what your journey was on that?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. So look, at the start, if you go down the grad model, then you can do it as, I don't know, 40 to 50,000 base with a tiered commission structure with an attractive top end. I think it's all about identity. It's all about just working out who do you want to be and where do you want to get to. If you are doing it and you're looking to hire experienced people in the US, based in the US, who are American citizens, it's going to cost you a lot of money. There's just no two ways about it. I interview people, not, you know, pretty regularly, who probably will want 200,000 in the form of a draw, in the form of a guarantee with a base, maybe 100, 120, you know, something like that. It's a lot of money. You know, and I think if you want to set up in the US properly, you need to be looking $750,000. You know, that's my honest opinion. To do it properly, it gives you a little bit of slack if you fail. If you've got a UK business or a German business, that is spitting out that level of money, then that's great. When I say, when I speak to people asking me for advice, which I do reasonably regularly, I say, okay, fine, that is going to have an impact on your dividends, on how much money you are going to draw down. Are you okay with that? It also might go wrong. And it also means, are you, how much time are you personally prepared to be in the US, and are your family, friends cool with that? My view is that you do need to be based over there, or one of the owners of that business needs to be based over there, and they need to live, breathe and sleep the lifestyle of doing it over there. I think if you're doing it from the UK and you're servicing it from the UK, I haven't seen many of those do it well and do it successfully, because I think eventually it's hard to scale up. You know, I was unable to get 10 people from the UK doing the US who were similar sets of standards, and I did really try. So I think you've got to go out there. I'm not really bothered now personally looking for people who want to stay in the UK forever and do the US. I'd let them do it for 3 to 6 months, but it's no life. You know, I can't expect people to do calls at 1 a.m. in the morning. And then you can't, because you can't go to sleep after that. You know, you're absolutely wired. I've spoken to a couple of people who were taking sleeping pills to help them do that. I'm like, fuck me, you're in your 20s. Do you really want to be doing this sort of stuff? It's not right. Yeah. So you've got to go out there, in my opinion, or to work for me anyway, within the first 6 months, and you've got to embrace it.
Yeah. So for anybody who's earlier in their journey and wondering what a tiered commission structure, the easiest way I would explain it is the first third covers business costs. The second third is split between you and the boss. The third bit is when you're a top performer and you're getting the lion's share of that. And the aim is the first bit keeps your job just about, because we need people who want more than that. The second bit, you're in the mid-tier of the room. It's valuable. It's grand. The third tier, we're bringing in a trophy for you every day. You're writing your own checks. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you're bang on. You've got a seat cost in the US. You know, if you're based in the US, your seat cost, I would imagine, would be something between $10,000 to $15,000 a month, depending on what you get with your firm, where your office is based, where, you know, if it's New York, LA, it'll be probably slightly higher than Chicago. We're pretty punchy on if they do $30,000 and above. If they do $30,000 and above, they get 24% of the whole lot. No threshold. And our business is set up where our average fee for one placement is north of 30,000. So really what I'm saying to them is, you do one deal, one placement, 360, yeah. You'll get the big whack, and that's the dream. So I'm deliberately trying to create a environment with high reward, but also high risk, because, you know, that deal drops out, my God. You know, it's a lot of money for the company to lose, but it's a lot more for the individual to lose. And there's various different takes on the commission structure when it gets out there. But it's what you're going to get, yeah, I suppose, a little bit in return for that. But there's a seat cost. And if you come in and you've got a really high base, there's going to be a red dot on you, I think. And I see that happen. You know, a lot of people in US firms, and some of these US firms are ruthless. They will cut you if they're not making their money.
What's the headcount at right now?
41. 38 of them are full-time, 3 of them, you know, back office people at the moment. We've hired, as I said earlier in the call, we've hired a few people to start next summer, about 5 in addition to that.
Are you in consolidation mode, or are you in a growth mode to get to the next headcount target?
I think what we need at the moment is probably a couple of senior people, because we recruited a lot of people in the summer, so we're definitely bottom heavy experience wise. So I'm in, you know, I've got discussions with a couple of senior people which I hope will yield some fruit, and that will then allow me to kind of go again, but with one eye on the market. You know, the market at the moment is, you've got to make sure you know your costs. You know, what is your break-even point every single month? We have very few contractors. We have some, but not many. And you've got to then look at your recurring revenue. Are you good at selling retainers? You know, is there a core level that you're selling retained at the moment? And then what is your floor? And this is what I always say to all my sales manager: what is your floor? What does your good look like? What does your bad look like? Don't give me these headlines, you know, you're going to be doing X, Y, and Z. You know, you've got to realize when you're bad, how bad are you? And then I do that with all the managers, and then Chris and I will kind of work that out, and we'll have a level of that we're fairly comfortable at as our floor, and we'll make sure we don't try and hit below that floor of the 12 months of the year.
And if somebody's in the UK listening to this and dreaming of a move abroad or considering it, what does their profile and track record need to look like for you to go, do you know what, you're worth it to either come straight out or to start in the UK and then come out? Walk me through that a little bit.
Yeah. So I think, look, if you want to get an E2 visa, you need 3 years experience. If anyone tells you otherwise, they are lying to you. Okay. So you need a minimum of 3 years experience. If you've got less than 3 years experience, then you ain't going to get a visa. And there's consequences of that, you know, because then you won't be allowed into the US. It's just a risk I would not advise anyone to take. So they've got to have 3 years of recruitment experience. This is not sales experience. For me, they would need to have built a minimum in the UK market of 150,000-160,000 sterling, with over 50% of that, and ideally 75% of that, on a BD level of success. I think this is for their benefit as well, because if they can't prove that they can do BD to themselves, then they will struggle, I think, out there. So that's what they've got to look at. You know, has it come from blue collar? Has it come from white collar? I think that we're probably looking for people who've had success in the STEM marketplaces. And then that will translate pretty well, whether you're doing life sciences, whether you're doing tech, whether you're doing engineering. And you've then got to be prepared to, I think, move from the UK within 3 to 6 months. Nearer to three is better. That's how long I think the visa process would start. You're going to need to start at the American firm, I think, before you start the visa process, because I think otherwise it's not cut and dry that you'll get the E2, and then you've just got to choose where you want to live in America, and you've got to do your due diligence on this. You know, you've got to work out, there's five local, you know, we're in Chicago, okay, we're probably, I, you know, there's a league table of where people want to go. It's New York, it's LA, and you've now got Austin, you've now got Florida. I would probably be honest enough to say Chicago is probably fifth on that list when you first speak to them. And then you've got to, the individual has got to say, right, if it is LA, what is it about LA that I'm really interested in? If it's New York, what is it that I'm really interested in? And what are the costs of living in these cities? Because, yeah, you might be able to have a great life in LA, but I was in LA, Santa Monica and West Hollywood over the summer, and I'm being charged $15 for a Moretti beer. And then you've got a tip on top of that. You know, it's not
And you're stepping over a homeless person on the way to it.
Stepping over a homeless person. New York is great. Look, I love New York, but it's CNN just voted it as the most expensive city in the world with Singapore this year. There's a reason for that. I've got really close friends earning $210,000 a year, and it isn't an easy lifestyle there. And you've got to really be honest about that. And what frustrates me a little bit with some of the people, you know, boasting about the level of earnings, the level of fees in the US. Yeah, sure, that's really great. But, you know, if you're going there to, what is the norm? What do people in your firm actually really earn, you know, who have been there, done it a bit? What is your standard level of performance? And if you're earning $150,000 a year, good, which I'd suggest is probably the case, that doesn't go very far in New York versus, say, Chicago. And that's why I think Chicago, I really believe in this city. Dallas as well, you know, Dallas obviously no income tax, you've got the same benefits of Austin. If you tried to, I was in Austin this year, it's a great place. You try and find an apartment there. The population is growing so fast, there isn't the accommodation there to house them, and then you're paying really, really high costs. You want to be paying $3,500 a month for rent? I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, I think that's quite a robust answer, both for founders who are thinking of setting up and for recruiters who are potentially looking to get there. Any other last thoughts on for anybody who is thinking about the US and like any preparation that they should do?
I think you've got to look at the tax rates in each of the different regions, and you've really got to look at what your spend is going to be. If you're going to be doing, I would look at a one bedroom flat cost on your own, because even if you do a flat share initially, then you might aspire to a one bedroom flat eventually. And I would work out whether it is what you think it is. I would look at the price of a coffee, a beer, a steak, you know, the sort of things that you maybe give you a good lifestyle, and just think, is it worth it? I think I would look at the expat success for moving over. We've been really, really successful. I think the guy we spoke about earlier, I mean, he billed over $1 million last year. Our top biller this year is an expat. I think we've managed to get 5 of our top 6 have been UK expats this year. I think that will be the case next year. I think it will be the grad contingent will do that. But you do need to look at that and the support structure. Yeah. You know, what are you going to be doing on a Sunday? You know, a Sunday when your family are at home can be really tough. What do you want your life to look like on a Sunday? You know, it's those sorts of periods of time. Sunday in February in Chicago or in New York when it's minus 15, yeah. You know, you're not going to be wanting to go. You can go out to the cinema. It's the, yeah. You know, the journey there is so cold. So you've really just got to be fairly honest about that. But the opportunity is incredible. And we had one of our grads started in the summer, did a 55,000 deal, and, you know, making, you know, near enough 15,000 commission from that placement. So it's really exciting. I posted the other week, and I really stand by this, that, you know, a premiership footballer, you know, or a good footballer generally speaking now will come to the premiership because of the opportunity, because of the potential. A good recruiter, they have to consider the US if their personal circumstances allows, because it's truly an unbelievable lifestyle.
Yeah, and if I could reflect on it from our own circumstance, I've worked in Australia and Canada and that, and I think if we had have got into recruitment maybe a little earlier, or went to America instead of Canada after Australia, we'd be in America now. And when I did the sums to work out like where we're going to go after COVID, and we looked at like what is our ideal life look like? Like, how much is it going to cost for schooling? How much does it cost for, how much is it going to cost for rent? Like, we like to have personal trainers, private Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes, like to eat out a lot, like to not work all the time, like to pay low taxes. We ended up here, but that probably comes to my point that there's a window in life to make these type of calls and to make this happen. And if you don't go for it at the right point, you have to go for another thing. And I'm happy here, but it's a plan B. So there's a finite time that you can do, isn't that right?
Yeah, it's your risk appetite. And I think that risk appetite before children, risk appetite before you've met your partner, risk appetite post over there. And I think you're bang on. I think raising a kid in New York or someone like that, I mean, I'm astonished at how much it costs. I am, you know, if you want childcare and it's preschool, I am astonished by how much it costs. I don't know how people afford it.
I don't know either.
But if you're 23, 24, and you've got only yourself to look after, then I get it. You know, I totally get it.
I think people underestimate that. You know, they think they're going to be young forever, and they think like they're like, oh, I'll wait until, like, I get this call all the time. I want to go to America, but I want to wait until I'm a senior manager. I'm like, it's going to be too late. You like their appetite to pay you senior management wage won't be there. You'll have to be married. You're probably not married. You've got kids. You're going to be looking at private school because it's going to be like everything right now is your time. Like, you can do this now. And for founders who are thinking of doing it as well, if you're going to move yourself over there, like, earlier the better. Because if you're having to do that with a family, it is so expensive. It's so hard. It can be done. Like, I've moved people across, but it's hard.
It's really hard. It's really hard. And it's just got to be whether it's worth it. It may be better to build 200,000 a year in Manchester and have a life that is reflective of that cost. But I suppose it's also really important to dream. Yeah. I mean, some of the lesser well-known US cities, the Denvers of this world, the Philadelphias of this world, I think there's great opportunity there. You know, I've got no dog in the fight with those places, but I believe in them. I just don't believe in the really expensive US cities as much now.
I suppose to finish on a good note with risk versus reward, if you were to look at your business partner's journey from Portsmouth to making that move to America, like, what does his life look like having worked out doing all those steps?
He's had a wonderful journey. And I think where, you know, the heart of our relationship is friendship. You know, we've become really quite tight with each other and prepared to, you know, very comfortable disagreeing with each other and so forth. But his life is great. I mean, he's the CEO, he runs this business, you know, makes the decisions on a day-to-day basis. You know, we consult and speak fairly regularly, but I defer to him on virtually everything. He has been able to buy a huge place in Chicago with a roof terrace that is bigger than flats, with a TV screen and, you know, grill areas and all that sort of thing. He's you know, married and settled down, and his life has, you know, completely changed. And he's built some initiatives to really help those less fortunate. You know, we've set up a charity over there to where we give $1,000 of our fee to anyone who's from a diverse background. And, you know, we only did that fairly recently, and it's raised, you know, enough now to start schooling and to making a real impact. So there's a little bit more, you know, than trying to be a typical recruitment company. And I think what's really worked well for him is we are a US company. I have no aspirations to do the UK, to do Europe. If we pull vacancies in those areas, I just would say, right, you know, we can't help you there. This is people in my network. I'll get no money from it. I don't want any money from it. And, you know, it's for them to do their best to do it. And I think that's helped him just be able to focus solely on the US and to do what works for his business over there. And it's been a real eye-opener. I think last week he had what I thought was the most crazy idea to take out all the parents of the staff of our people in Chicago. I thought, oh my God, you are a cliched wanker. This is just so not me. Do not tag me on it.
That's so far from you.
I am going to get so much banter. And it was the best thing. I was there and it was the best thing ever because it's so important. You know, parents are so...
Buys in loyalty as well.
It buys in loyalty, and it's so amazing to see the parents of some of your staff and just think, wow, you know, because you get to know the staff really well, and it's just like, wow, you know, this is part of the reason maybe for, you know, the way you are and stuff like that. And they're just so proud of their children. They just want to, you know, they want to see out their children's life. And I know with my parents, they didn't know what I did. You know, those days at S3, my God, I'd come back on a Saturday morning from wherever I'd been. I'm like, she's got the shakes and stuff like that. What the fuck are you doing, Mark, over there? Whereas, you know, here it's just really great to meet, you know, people and the loved ones. But that was his idea. That was nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And so I'm learning so much, you know. Yeah. It's great.
All right, Mark, that's us today. Thank you so much.
Lovely to talk to you.